This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is a verse from Bob Dylan's song, "It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding." A question in your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy, ensure you not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. This is a very relevant song. I don't know what was going through Bob in that moment, but you can read it now, all of it. This is a verse 9 out of, I think, 15 or 16. So Zen teachers and any wise people, bodhisattvas, all know the importance and are persistent in lighting up questions in the nerves of students and trying to turn up the heat of inquiry, a life of inquiry, questioning. We hear from Dogen, "Immediately and energetically extinguish the flames on our head and courageously make undaunted effort. At such a time, how do you practice? Do you want to clearly understand this?" He says, "This questioning is not a matter of the intellect or discriminating consciousness, but questioning that pervades nerves, sinews, muscles, cells, and spine." So, there we go, Dylan and Dogen. A question in your nerves is lit. And Dogen, of course, has to go much deeper. Sinews, muscles, cells, spine, nerves. And many of us might think the fruits of a spiritual teaching of any kind is to provide answers to our biggest questions in life. But I also find the opposite to be true. It's not actually to answer questions, but to question our answers. Provide inquiry and rest in not knowing in the most intimate sense. I remember a parent asking Roshi years ago, "How can I transmit or give this practice to my children? How can I let them know about the teachings?" And I remember Shugan responding. He said, "Well, I'm not a parent, but I would say, how do you let them find questions? How do you honor your child's inquiry and not give them the answers, but let them keep, find the questions in their answers, question their answers, find more questions, to applaud and wonder, to applaud doubt, listen to their explorations." So we often hear entering practices to do. And in doing that, we will absolutely be undone. Undone. Practice will undo us absolutely in our doing. If we don't do the teaching, don't study, don't apply courageously the teachings, it can affect the transformation. So it's very practical. Buddha always said, "I'm very practical." So today I wanted to look at inquiry, the nature of inquiry, not as some quick answer, but what it might be like to bathe in the light of "there is no answer fit." The practice of the Dharma is learning how to live. And this is both hard work, but it's joyful work at the same time. Yes. A practice life makes a lot of extraordinary demands on us. And it requires that we don't take anything for granted, that we don't accept anything on faith alone. And that if we practiced honestly, with integrity, with diligence, it will definitely lead us to question things. Question everything about ourselves, who we think we are, our most basic beliefs, and about the Dharma itself. So what is inquiry for you? This is a really good question. Really good question. And like most really good questions, it's really basic. In a way, authentic inquiry is allowing ourselves to care, to take on the burden buoyant of caring. Because when we're asking, when we're questioning, it means we care about something. We care. And to let that, to carry that burden, joyful burden, buoyant burden. And as Dogen said, most of us know what it's like to inquire out of our intellectual interests when we are asking for the sake of asking or because we think we should. And in the end, this might not be taking such good care. But when we care about something, it gets inside of us, doesn't it? Really gets inside of us. It pervades the nerves, the sinews, the muscles, the cells, and the spine. A question in our nerves is lit. Gets inside that shell that keeps us from being affected or bothered. The shell that keeps anything really new from happening. So in the beginning, to deeply inquire about anything or something, we need to care about it in some way. And I was just thinking after sitting with people today that I learned so much, so many different ways of asking, because it doesn't come out of a person's mouth. It doesn't always come out of our mouth. We ask questions in very alive, different ways. And so I'm very helped by students to find my own student mind, my own questioning way of inquiry. It's in a body, it's in a physicality, how we're meeting space, are in space, how we're living. Could be as a question, you could feel it. As a what? Who? Where? When? What? And that's just imbues us. Right? And sometimes it gets more solid, doesn't have that fluidity. So it's important to be asking what we sincerely care about. The inquiry will be most effective if it's personal and not about spiritual teaching or something that's outside of our experience. It needs to be something that's coming from inside. And when we care, we feel this care from the inside, and we care enough to let it get inside the shell. What is it you really care about? What pulls you in, even those of you for your first time? What pulled you in today? What did you care about? How about this minute? And if we look close enough, I think we can see how much we impose, how we impose ideas from the outside upon ourselves, and they don't really lead to real inquiry. 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 Okay. So in caring, we enter into a love affair with what we care about. And at times that can draw us into an ecstatic, radiant state of bliss. And at other times it's confusing. We're drawn into confusion where we don't know what to do. We don't know where we're going. We feel a bit out of control. And that's actually the signal that we're letting caring get under our skin. When we feel a little bit crazy sometimes, it's getting under our skin. And when we find this kind of caring, inquiry has some power behind it. And we also may find our inner integrity. We find something inside that's really stable. Really stable. There's a place inside us that's willing to be a little crazy. Crazy enough to let inquiry seriously, take inquiry seriously, and not hold anything sacred. So holding nothing sacred means that nothing is assumed to be true and all our assumptions are fair game. Ultimately, our most sacred and unquestioned assumptions about ourself, others, and life, these seem to be the most important to question. So inquiry is a means to take us back to ourself, back to our experience. It's one of the tools we have to shake up, dislodge how we can grasp and adhere to those opinions and ideas that are not serving, that are unnecessary. That's the hard work. It's like really to inquire about it all. And we know as well, I think most of us, that it's not the belief, the opinion, or the idea that's the problem. It's finding an identity and a point of view. Then being attached to the point of view, becoming a rock in a world that only works in fluids. It's only fluid. Life is fluid, moving, changing, if you haven't seen that so far, as much as we resist and want to hold it. So if we didn't derive identity through ideas, beliefs, opinions, our points of view, then we would be fluid. Back to our natural state. What is complete, fluid, relational, always. Actually unified. Living when on all these differences. So one of the teachings of the Buddha, the Kalama Sutra, Sutta, is one of my favorites. Precisely because it encourages us to really inquire. Deep inquiry into our beliefs. And it was relevant then, and it's so relevant now in our time. This incredible advice the Buddha gives to the Kalamas to question authority, histories we've been taught, the teachings, and rely on oneself, which is difficult. Sometimes we don't even know how to do this or to do it. Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote, "In most religions, the authority of God or a prophet as revealed in the scripture and interpreted by religious institutions is the arbiter of what is true. Buddhism presents this great challenge. We are the arbiters of what is true. However, that doesn't mean we can choose to believe whatever we like. There is something that is true through everything. And I wanted to point that out because this sutra is often misinterpreted in that way. We can believe our mind's ideas, and that may not be so true. We know this. I'm sorry, but it's corrupt up here, you know, if you want to use that word. And you know, I've used this joke a million times. I'll repeat it one more time. Going to our mind for all the answers is like asking a corrupt police department to investigate itself. Right? Buddha provides examples and a framework that we as practitioners can test the teachings and judge their accuracy. He inspires faith to inquire, wonder, doubt, and not know as the place of rest. As the place of rest. And in Buddhism, and in my life, and perhaps yours, perhaps you were not infused with this spirit of the sutta, this spirit of questioning, of critical examination. I don't think I was. I think it was art practice that really brought questions up for me of what this world was. What am I dealing with? What are things? What is all this? Who am I? Who's this maker? Like, that was through art practice that those came up to me. And I'm not sure that I would be in this practice today if that care or that inquiring mind wasn't encouraged. So here's the sutta. The Buddha and several of his monastics traveled through the Kosala country and entered the town of the Kalama people called Kesaputta. The Kalama people told the Buddha that many monks and Brahmins had come to Kesaputta before him. Each of these religious people, they're religious people. They had expounded their own doctrines and reviled the doctrines of others. "Venerable sir," they asked the Buddha, "which of these reverend monastics and Brahmins speak the truth and which is falsehood?" Here the Buddha gave one of his most widely quoted teachings. "Of course you are uncertain, Kalamas. Of course you are in doubt. When there are reasons for doubt, uncertainty is born. So in this case, Kalamas, don't go by reports, by legends, by traditions, by scripture, by logical conjecture, by inference, by analogies, by agreement through pondering views, by probability, or by thought. This contemplative is our teacher. When you know for yourselves that these qualities are unskillful, these qualities are blameworthy, these qualities are criticized by the wise, these qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to harm and to suffering, get rid of it. Get rid of it. Abandon it. But by the same token, when you know for yourselves that these qualities are skillful, these qualities are blameless, these qualities are praised by the wise, these qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to welfare, to happiness, then you should enter and remain in them. By gently asking them questions, the Buddha guided the Kalamas to understand teachings based in greed, hate, and delusion are unskillful. Teachings absent of greed, anger, and delusion are skillful. By applying these criteria, we can understand truth from falsehood. Buddha said he is like a doctor who pointed out a medicine for pain and suffering. The foolish store this medicine without using it or even testing it. right? So there it is, and you're like, wow, I love the label. It's beautiful. Looks good on my shelf. They prefer to just read the label and marvel at it. Buddha said, my teachings is not for them. My teaching is for people who test the Dharma. And he also said, one who sees me sees the Dharma. One who sees the Dharma sees me. So the Kalama situation is not really much different than ours today. We too are inundated with a spiritual market of possibilities. So you're interested in religion? Well, what kind? Buddhism? What flavor would you like? Tibetan? Korean? Vietnamese? Vipassana? Zen? So we too, we have this swirling marketplace of spiritual practice. It's no wonder we get confused. And we have a swirl of many other offerings. So just like the Kalamas, we're confused. And they too are a skeptical, responsible bunch, not unlike us. Quite alive to spiritual matters, but overrun with teachers and teachings, each competing for audience. I really love skeptical people. I'm not one of them, really. But some people are just so dogged in their, like, how come? How come? I don't know. I don't know. I just really admire that sometimes. Each putting forth in this a different path, different instructions, different ways to practice were offered. So they became confused about what's true, what's worth doing. Overwhelmed by these claims to exclusive truth. So when Buddha arrived, he's had the reputation of a great sage. But they were concerned that he was just one more teacher competing for a point of view. And the history of the world reveals that we're drawn to those who provide an uncompromising teaching. Right? Just look at history. Good charisma. Someone who says something so powerfully. Someone who says, this is it, and everyone else is wrong. Somehow I hear that song again. Everyone else has no idea what they're talking about. So certainly we do see this being played out in the political arena, but we also see this in spiritual arenas. And I use the word, we see this abuse in spiritual arenas, in political arenas. I think that word fits. I often, when I go to a movie, sometimes there's moments I feel abused by a message or something somebody wants me to get. And it's harsh. And it makes me wonder, like, you know, do we really want freedom? Can we handle that responsibility? Or would we prefer to have someone give us answers and not do the hard work for ourselves? And sometimes I would like someone to just give me the answers. The hard work, if you want to call it hard work, necessary work, living work, is required in our human life. It doesn't have to be hard, but it's deep. And sometimes I will ask someone, like, just tell me what to do. And inside, I kind of know, but it's more of that helpful thing. Like, I can't think of it right now, so I'll say to someone, tell me what to do. And then I can work off of that. And sometimes I notice, and you might, how I would often grasp at the first things that would made me feel better. But truth may or may not make us feel better. Some truths are beautiful, and some are shocking. We know this too. But a great vitality and energy comes from discovering what is true. And in the end, that taking care comes through. There is a sense we feel more connected, more intimate. And when I came to this as a practice, just like in the art process, I knew it wasn't different, that it was going to take time and effort to explore. It does. It's our life. And there was evidence in staying pretty quickly. And if we do have a question, we do have an answer already. That's how it works, because we're not undivided. So whatever we're asking, it's there, but there may be some effort, time, relaxation needed until it finds its way into the body-mind connection. It has to find us. We put it, the energy out there, the asking, the request, until it finds us, because it's already here. There's nothing outside. It's here to satisfy, ensure you not to quit, to keep it in our mind and not forget, as Dylan writes. And then we get that insight. And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of insights, hopefully. We keep having insights. And that gives us the faith to continue. So Dogen speaks of this as whole faith-like body. Have faith in your zazen, even without knowing, and question everything. Body, mind, or exactly faith. You in zazen, you chanting, you walking. We don't know who is sitting or what is going on or what should we be done by whom. Complete trust through the body and mind. Then we will know exactly what to do, what to trust. So this word faith, it's translated in Pali as sada, to place the heart upon something, to give our hearts over to. So how do we know what to give our hearts over to? How do we know? How can we be definite? How can we know if this will work? How do we know what to trust? How do we trust? We can explore the questioning with our direct practice, our direct experience. See what the exploration brings up. If the exploration is sustained, then a commitment is made. Because deep commitment to such an exploration is necessary. Explorers know they have to continue when they see something, when they glimpse something they have never seen before. Then they know, I need to go a little further. I got a glimpse. I need to go a little further. Jack Kornfield wrote in A Path with Heart, spiritual transformation is a profound process that doesn't happen by accident. We need a repeated discipline, a genuine training in order to let go of our old habits of mind and sustain a new way of seeing. To mature on the spiritual path, we need to commit ourselves in a systematic way. With commitment, working through doubt and discouragement, we drill deeper and deeper into Dharma, into ourselves. The sampling approach is like digging 1-foot wells instead of a 20-foot well. You don't get beneath the surface. We all have choices, though, what we want to do. So, you can question that. Faith evolves through our own understanding, our faith to doubt, to inquire. With the levels of communication we have, I think faith is very elusive and slippery, a questionable thing. There seems to be a great deal of effort to keep us away from feeling what we feel. The message is, no, don't access your wisdom and question things. Often it feels like there's a force to believe something expressed by others that seems to be true. Do you feel this? Or am I crazy? Right? Like, even if it's cold relief medicine. Like, you know, I was on vacation and there's a lot of commercials, of course, for drugs, and I don't watch TV, so it's always very interesting to get back to TV. And it's like, I felt like I had to go out and get this stuff or I was going to die. I really, you know, and you see it with like sneakers. Like, if you don't have these sneakers, you cannot walk. You can't walk. So the message is like, we're lacking. We really need something. And we don't know what's best. I even found myself with my sister going online to order something. And I suddenly went like, do I really need this? Like, it was fun. It was underwear. So yeah, a special kind. They're called thunder pants, if you don't know them. And for sitters, excuse me for the segue, you can erase this. But for sitters, they're amazing. It changes your life. Direct experience. You can get up and just walk. You don't have to pull anything anywhere. So, you know, just sitting down here doesn't mean we're infused with inquiry just because we take a seat. It's encouraged and it's taught, but it doesn't happen. There's that doing part. Of course you are uncertain, Kalamas. Of course you are in doubt. When there are reasons for doubt, uncertainty is born. When you know for yourselves that these qualities are unskillful, blameworthy, criticized by the wise, when adopted and carried out, lead to harm and suffering, then don't do it. Abandon it. This kind of doubt is really positive, really healthy. It's the edge of the investigation which says, I'm not going to accept this just because someone else says it's so. I really want to know. It's the cutting edge of our wisdom, the voice that says, I want to know for myself. And it's not saying we don't need teachers or teachings either, because we do need that. We do need to hear someone say, these qualities are skillful. These are unskillful, and then bring it back and try it in the cauldron of our own life experience. And we don't get the answers right away. That's why we need that to sustain ourselves. We need to stay. Otherwise, we'll keep switching. It'll get uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good, and we'll move, right? We'll change. And sometimes doubt can be an excuse to remove ourselves from a situation and not put something into practice. We stand back and we judge, speculate, not commit ourselves to take a risk, not see what happens if we practice. So we can just stop at doubt. I don't think this is true, and then we stand back and protect that investigation. You see, so it needs both. It's good to have it, but we have to go a little further. We may feel power in standing apart, but that's not a strong strength. It might be more of a conceit or an indulgence. It'll be short-lived, and you probably know this. It doesn't give us the confidence to discover what's true for ourselves. It's more intellectualization, not the direct experience the Buddha is encouraging. So Buddha's response to the Kalamas is in effect, put it into practice. This is how we know, this direct experience. And I found this nice little story. It's a teaching from China, which kind of shows this direct experience. So people came from far and wide to hear the Dharma talk of a young teacher. Apparently he had some depth. And one day the old master came to him. The old master came to hear him. So he sat in the back of the meditation hall while the young teacher was giving the Dharma talk. But the young teacher saw him, and out of respect, knowing he was a renowned teacher and also much older, said, "Please come up and sit here next to me while I give my talk." So the old master got up and rose and sat next to him, and the young teacher started to talk again. And he would every other word was a quotation from a different sutra or Zen master. And the old master started to nod off right in front of everyone. And this young teacher could see him out of the corner of his eye, but he just, you know, continued. And the more authorities he cited, the sleepier the old master became. So finally, the young teacher couldn't stand it anymore, so he turned to the teacher and he said, "What's wrong? Is my teaching so boring, so awful, so totally off?" And at that point, the old master leaned over and pinched him really hard, and he screamed, "Ah!" And he said, "Ah, that's what I came for." That pure teaching. So that's like that old master in the story. The Buddha, in his response to the Kalamas, is trying to emphasize that kind of direct experience where we feel it. It's under our skin, sinews, nerves. He sees that we rely upon many different modes of authority, internal, external, some reliable, some way off the mark. How do we tell which is which? How do we balance inner authority with external authority? And the Buddha tells the Kalamas, as he's telling us as we're sitting here today, how do we know how to act? He's not saying in this Kalama Sutra, these ancient teachings are irrelevant, that we have to reinvent the Dharma wheel every time we think. He's not saying we don't need guidance of teachers, or that we need to read scriptures, or how to find out what is praised. That is how we find out what's praised and pointed to. He is saying, don't give final authority to these things. Don't give final authority to your own ideas, to our own ideas. Test the teachings in the laboratory of your actions. Come, Kalamas, don't go by reports, legends, scripture, inference, analogies, consistency with your own views. Don't believe anything just because I say it or some worthy being says it. Don't believe anything because it's held to be traditionally true. Traditions are not to be followed simply because they are traditions. Don't believe anything because you've read it. Believe it is truth from your own experience. Do you find that this particular meditation or spiritual practice leads to a diminishing of your greed, of your anger, of your fear in your mind? If you're shaking your head, yes, you can follow it. You can trust this. If you find it leads to clarity, there's less delusion, less feeling of being cut off or disconnected. Yep, you can trust it. When we really put something to the test, it'll stretch us. It'll rupture us, dislodge us, inspire us. We can be inspired, emotionally and intellectually nourished, and satisfied to hear teachings. But we can't stop at that. To explore and really feel the benefit, we have to let that teaching stretch us. Stretch us from our living experience. Hold it up to scrutiny and let it hold us up to scrutiny. Buddha said, be a lamp unto yourself. So what is the test of truth? The Buddha offers a simple formula. Test things in terms of cause and effect. Whatever is unskillful, leading to harm, abandon it. What is skillful, leading to happiness and peace, pursue it. Apply the test of skillfulness to all the teachings in your actions. Where is the teaching taking you? Is it moving you in the direction that is wise and kind? One quick test isn't enough to know, he says. We all have to keep at it so that the sensitivity to the results of our actions grows more and more refined in our practice. When you have done the hard work of asking these questions, you can decide for yourself whether a teaching or a teacher is worth following. At the same time, we've entered this most creative process, and the very pleasure of teaching ourselves how to live. And that kind of learning that can bring so much joy, a measure of peace and insight, because we've brought it to ourselves. And the energy to go even more deeper, becoming more fully of our natural self, and then to give it away. Ultimately, to just keep it moving. We can't claim it. To give life to the Buddha. It's all right, Ma. I'm only bleeding. A question in your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit. To satisfy, ensure you not to quit. To keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. And I'll end with, what's this? Oh, I'm going to end, but this was another, I kept finding stuff. I think David White offers us something nice about asking a beautiful question. He says the ability to ask beautiful questions often is in very unbeautiful moments, is one of the great disciplines of human life. And a beautiful question starts to shape your identity as much by asking it as it does by having it answered. You just have to keep asking. And before you know it, you will find yourself actually shaping a different life, meeting different people, finding conversations that are leading you in those directions that you wouldn't even have seen before. Thank you. Have a great holiday. So much appreciation for your practice and us being here on this mountain together, being able to ask. We're at a time where we really need to ask and go into ourselves and then stand up. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.